make it pretty quick. I've been trying to tell a lot of people. So,
all right, good, good. So I got it flowing. Thanks, Cameron, for speaking to me today. We chatted a little bit earlier, and the stuff was so fascinating. I said I got to really record this, get this down properly. So, Cameron, you're an ED intensivist or an ED doc in New York.
Yeah, so I'm trained in I'm an ED and a critical care trained doctor in New York City, and you know, I was actually just working in the ER up until about 6-7 days ago, and then I was tasked with opening up sort of on the fly a full COVID ICU unit, and sort of been spending the last 5 days bedside with these patients.
Okay. And yeah, so you had a tweet that kind of generated a lot of interest and controversy, you know, which probably was a little purposeful in the wording, but, you know, telling everyone to stop intubating for hypoxemia. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
You know, so the thing about this condition and really is that everyone is mystified by it, you know, and everyone you talk to, there's something about it no one can understand. It's nothing like we've ever seen. Things are happening that just don't make sense. And for anyone who has intubated one of these patients, I'm sure they've seen that they desaturate very quick and it doesn't seem to have any effect on their heart rate. And I've seen desaturations in the 10s, 20s. And to be honest, I've for the first time in my life looked at a monitor and saw a desaturation of zero for several seconds. And without any effect on the heart rate. So all these things are happening that just don't make sense. You know, and to be perfectly honest, I have now come to the conclusion that we are treating the wrong disease.
Right. And part of that may have to do a little bit with nomenclature. You know, it's been called the ARDS, but obviously there's not much distress.
Yeah, there's no, you know, I see ARDS as sort of a encompassing, it's sort of a broad term that in itself really means, you know, they got a pretty bad looking x-ray and they're hypoxemic. Mm-hmm. But in itself, it doesn't say anything about the pathophysiology of what's going on. And I will tell you, and this is almost, you know, what's amazing about this condition is its uniformity. That this is not syphilis. This is not the great imitator. It is amazing how uniform all the presentations are. From the initial presentation to when patients get intubated to their decompensation and multi-organ failure, which does seem to, at least clinically, carry the path of, you know, they get intubated, they go into renal failure, they get edema, they get cardiac conditions, it all cycles, you know, until eventual death. And I'm sure that, or recovery, which, for many people involves dialysis, you know, I can tell you that I have taken, you know, I had a patient who did not want to be intubated. And it, one of the distressing things about this disease is you will talk to someone who is saturating in the mid-70s with no distress. And you will sit there trying to tell them that they need a breathing tube, knowing that the global mortality is somewhere around 80%. And this is probably by people much more experienced and more talented of intensivists than I am. And so it was a very, you know, she did not want it. And so we rode her pretty far on high flow till I absolutely had to do it. And I can tell you they do not, COVID does not cause a condition leading to respiratory fatigue. There is no fatigue. This is a purely hypoxemic condition. And the same goes for patients that palliative care patients. They do not struggle at the end of life insofar as having respiratory fatigue. It is purely hypoxemic, and they go through symptoms of anxiety and tachypnea and eventually to bradycardia. And that it's nearly uniform. I mean, it's been 5 days, so I can't speak as, you know, as if I've been treating this condition for years, but it seems to be that way.
Wow. And I mean, that kind of fits with what we see so far, or what I hear we see. And I've had a couple of patients that we had to transfer out to have them for 24 hours or 48 hours, but of a high compliance, so that explains the lack of work of breathing issues or really sense of dyspnea to some degree. I was just speaking to Rory. I think you know Rory's people.
Yeah.
And he was saying also that the fact that they're remaining relatively normal capnic, it may also have to do with the fact they don't have a feeling of respiratory distress. So
I mean, they are uniformly, this is pure, really, it's amazing how pure this is. It is truly pure hypoxemia. And, you know, to me, I struggled to figure out, you know, the patient I'm looking at, I've never seen this patient before, ever. You know, I was an ER doctor for a long time. I did a critical care fellowship. I have never seen this condition. And I've really come to the conclusion that it is most closely clinically related to a condition I have never seen, which is pulmonary decompression sickness, or the bends, which it seems from reading happens to be a rare disease within a rare disease, sort of the rarest of the bends. So it's something we've never seen, or similarly like high altitude sickness. But it, you know, if you look at these patients, it is as if they were slowly going on an elevator up into the sky for 1 day, 3 days, 10 days, 15 days. And it really does, you know, I've taken patients far and, you know, they're hoping and you're hoping that it stops. And I do think it stops. We have taken patients pretty far on high flow. And then for some reason it stops and they start getting better. And what I truly, truly believe, I've come to believe, and I could be wrong. And I really, part of the reason that, you know, I'm happy to talk to you and happy to talk to anybody, is because I feel like many people are talking about the operations of this disease, how many vents we can get, and so forth, and how many beds we have, and all the operational stuff that within disaster management. But I think we need to talk about how to treat this disease. And if you look at, you know, what Gattinoni and the Italians put out on March 20th, I mean, that is what they're saying, that this is, you know, a high compliance hypoxemic condition predominantly defined by pulmonary hypertension, which fits with the entire sort of cascade leading to mortality. And the fact, if that's true, that patient, the last thing the patients truly need truly is a ventilator, that really what they need is oxygen. They need oxygen. And sometimes at levels we cannot achieve, you know, atmospherically possibly.
Right.
But I'm certain, you know, that if were we able to give 200% oxygen, 300% oxygen, you know, if you could dial the ventilator higher, you know, that they just need time in order for this virus to stop. And so now I'm not even entirely sure that that ARDS necessarily is inherently connected with COVID, and I see them as two entities. You know, and I'm sure that if we were, you know, it's not, I don't think you'd have to die of millions of people. I'm sure that if, you know, someone could find the hemoglobinopathy or the exact site of attack, that, you know, proper therapies would work. And if you look at the patient populations that are generally protected, I mean, what we're talking about is a shift of the oxygen dissociation curve to the right. And it's slowly going more and more to the right. And if you look at, you know, pregnant women and children, I mean, these are people that are somewhat protected from that shift. And, you know, I don't, you know, I got to go in tomorrow and figure out what to do. And it's, you know, any help or any advice is much appreciated at this time.
Well, I wish I could speak from experience. Not there yet. I think in a week or two, we'll be able to. I mean, just conceptually, obviously, I think you hit one nail on the head as you were talking. You know, I was thinking hyperbaric chambers, you know, and the higher, you know, a higher, you know, amount of oxygen we can dissolve in the plasma would be probably pretty good. You know, what else do we have? You know, the, I remember the old hemoglobin or the artificial hemoglobins and the H box and things like that to just get oxygen, or I don't know, but it sounds like, you know, VVFO might be useful in these patients.
Before you intubate them. So that's, I was thinking, put them on VV ECMO, don't intubate them. I mean, I don't want to say the ventilator is causing injury, but what is the natural, so when you I'm sure if people, it's so uniform that I'm sure doctors all around the country are going to experience such similar things, which is why I think, social media in this sense is very good. But after you intubate them, and this is what we've been trained, what I've been trained, they will be saturating about 30, 50. And then what the natural course that you do, slam up the PEEP. And I think, boom, I think that's where some of the injury occurs. I don't see where and why they would need PEEP. And so, if I'm trying to design a protocol of what to do, they probably need no PEEP or just enough PEEP to open some alveoli to give them a little more oxygen, and then just FiO2 of 100% until they get better. And that's, seems to be some of what you can take from, what the Italians were saying. And in a sense, I see this as the Italians got hit first, and we might be benefiting from their sort of post, they're still in it too, but from what their reflections are on the whole thing.
Yeah, because basically what's going around right now is, a belief that you do have to intubate them early. And then if we look at mechanical ventilation as coming like as a package, a package where you don't have much mobility, where you're, all those things. And perhaps if you could minimize that time on the mechanical ventilator until, like you were saying earlier, the virus switches off or our immune system just knocks it off, and then you can heal instead of spending 2 weeks, if maybe you can spend 1 week on it, maybe you can squeak out at the end. I don't know.
So that's initially why I tried to ride the high flow. I thought, look, this is a 14-day vent run. That's hard. There's a lot of bad stuff that could happen. I thought if I can knock off, 3 days on the front, that would, you take a 12-day into a 9-day, a 9-day into 6-day. And I have found that some patients, it's the strangest thing. It just stops. It's as if someone said, you get 1 day, you get 3 days, you get 5 days, you get 12 days. And at some point it just stops and you walk in and they feel better. It's a wild thing. I can tell you what we're doing now, what I'm sort of planning to do, and this is working within the confines of a hospital and in general of an atmosphere where ArtsNet is very embraced, as it is all over the country and all over the world, is that right now we are using high flow, and we were trying to determine our trigger. First, when they come to the unit, which the trigger, and these are all fluid, made up, in 5 days just by, trial and error, was that they initially would come to the unit when they required an FiO2 of 60% to sat, 88, 90. Now our units are becoming full. So there are many people on the floor that require critical care. So that's less of a necessary criteria now. And then there was the big question of when to intubate. And our initial criteria that we just used as a trigger was when they were required 80% to achieve 88 and 90. But then we went to talk to that lady I spoke of before who, looked at you with no shortness of breath, complaining of raging fevers. I mean, they have, they feel terrible, but they're not short of breath. And, it just didn't seem right at that time to intubate her. And so now we've sort of set the trigger arbitrarily and we're open to changing it, is that they require a SAT of 90% to achieve 88 to 90, accompanied with distress, which generally comes in the form of anxiety and tachypnea. Soon we'll have to then, I see it as sort of a ladder. So then really when you intubate them, you're just trying to get them a little further, in which case ideally, I'm thinking you'd set the PEEP just above what it was, with high flow and set an FiO2 of 100%. But this is all, this is new. We're,
if it
sounds reasonable, I would do it, but it's hard. I'm working, I don't want to do anything that's not right, but I certainly have a sense that putting someone who's in the viral stage on traditional ArdsNet ventilation is going to trash their lungs. And that's just seems to be the case. And so I would love to just hear the experience from everyone else, because we got to get through this one way or the other. You know, I see a lot of patients in my hospital now that are on ventilators and extremely high vent settings. Any way to avoid that would be amazing.
Yeah. Wow. lots of food for thought.
Yeah.
Lots of food for thought.
I would just ask people, really, like, look, when you intubate the patients, have someone look at the monitor. You know, look at what's going on. It's mystical. It's something we've never seen. And I'm quite sure but it seems to clinically be some kind of attack on the capillary alveolar interface, combined with some kind of hemoglobinopathy that is just something that I have never seen. And it's just making everyone shake their heads.
Yeah. And just in case there ends up being, some junior listeners or people who are being, dragged into critical care to help out, there's nothing magical about a SAT of 90 or 95. It's all about the oxygen delivery. So therefore how much, the body's going to extract from that. So if you're at 75, but you're able to extract nicely and you come back with if you've got a decent cardiac output, you've come back with a mixed venous that may be in the 50s or the 45s, you're still okay. Obviously, as you drop down lower and lower, there's going to be a limit to what, especially if you have, some other comorbidities, particularly coronary or things like that, where you're not going to just get enough oxygen to the heart, then you're going to start down a death spiral. Particularly if you have an RV that's suffering at the same time, then you're just going to just slide down the tube. Yeah. But yeah, I can see how if you're otherwise fairly healthy, you can tolerate a SAT in the 70s and, extracting like crazy. Your low, your mixed venous is super low, but you manage to just squeak enough oxygenation through the lungs.
Yeah. And I can tell you from experience, I think the tweet I put out, the saturation was 44 with no effect in heart rate. To be clear, that was a palliative care patient.
Yeah.
And so we're just trying to demonstrate a principle, which is shocking. But from experience, I would say, part of what's going on is pulmonary, vasoconstriction, which is, this is at least what the Italians think, causing pulmonary hypertension. And really that's worsened by hypoxemia. So certainly, the goal is to have them as high as you possibly can. And if everyone, could be on a high flow machine or in a hyperbaric chamber or on as much oxygen as possible, I would think just from the pathophysiology that is suggested by the Italians, that might be the way to do. So I'm in no way advocating let people ride out at extremely low saturations. I just run into the quandary where I'm quite sure that putting them on ventilator settings that are accepted with, and that I've been trained to do could possibly cause significant harm.
Yeah. And I think it was great that you tweeted that out to cause all this. Controversy is what brought us here and really worth discussing. And, knowing how, medical systems and physicians and departments work, this is going to be a tough nut to crack. Mm-hmm. So I think, certainly we're going to keep an eye out on all this stuff and keep talking. And, I think we have a pretty good phone network of people who are happy to go physiology and, medicine-based evidence as opposed to evidence-based medicine necessarily and report back, everything that we can about this.
I would appreciate any feedback from anyone because I do think, in the face of an 80% mortality by extremely good people where the last 20% probably have significant morbidity, I do think, the crux of it is that with an oncoming, tsunami, for me, this can't peak soon enough really, but with estimates, it won't peak in, 3, 4, 5 weeks. I do think we have to try to not just look at the operations of how we get this done, but how we better treat the disease. And so I look forward to hearing people's thoughts.
I'm sure there will be. I'm sure there will be. Thanks very much for talking today. And I'm sure.
Thank you very much.
See you soon.
All right. Thank you, Philippe.